This episode of Country Squire Radio is brought to you by Missouri Meerschaum. We thank them for supporting this show, and we thank you for supporting them.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD!
Hey, Bo. Good morning, man.
Hey, good morning.
It's so weird. I'm sitting across the table from you. It's crazy.
Yes,
it feels good, man. This is a high point.
Dude, it's actually, this is a blast from the past, because not only are we in the same location,
yeah.
It is the crack of 10 a.m.,
yeah.
Which is, for John David Cole, ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand.
Bright this, and early.
Very early. Like, the kid showed up and was like, man, you got to have to wake up way earlier. And he's like, no, I don't wake up until 10 a.m.
It's so true, man. I'm totally pitiful. But, man, we're here and, trying to get our act together. So, it's great. Already a couple coffees in, trying to get this water down to make my voice listenable, palatable to the ears. So,
no, this is great, because, I mean, yeah. Obviously pipe smokers are always accustomed to a more baritone sound, of course. I mean, it's just, it's par for the course. I mean,
that makes sense.
You got some tenors in the pipe in the pipe world as well, but there is, like, you know, then you get the early morning pipe smokers, and it's like, all right.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right.
We got to have the coffee and the water going, but, man, I am super excited to be back here in
so
Jackson.
It's so good to have you here. Yeah, it's interesting. This kind of came in a couple of points. Of course, we were going to try to connect a few weeks ago, and then, of course, the end of the world, and again,
yeah,
as is tradition by this point. But right. You want to tell folks what you're doing?
I think I can talk about this. So it's kind of cool. I've got a project that I'm working on for the Eudora Welty House.
Yeah. Now, the Eudora Welty, Pulitzer Prize winning author from our city. Her house is in our neighborhood.
Yeah, I was about to say, not just the city, but our neighborhood as well.
Yeah.
I guess your neighborhood.
Yeah, my neighborhood. Right.
But a historic location, and they've got her home and her garden. The Eudora Welty House qualified for a grant to put together an audio tour of the garden. And and it was really great, man. We had planned to do this during the Ice Age, but then the Ice Age pushed it back. And so this worked out for this week to be able to come down and do it. And it was beautiful. We did a pop-up kind of recording studio in the garden. So you had, you know, the cardinals and mockingbirds and, like, blue jays and, like, all of just the sounds of the garden. And there's a J-Tran bus stop, like, right outside of the house as well. So occasionally if the bus would come by.
Get that little bit of city ambiance kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, in as much as Belhaven is kind of part of the city, I mean, like, it's like the bus coming through, I feel, is the one city sound that we're able to get.
In Jackson, Mississippi.
Exactly.
Right. Other than police sirens,
that's true too. But
exploding
no.
water mains. Yeah.
But it was really great, man. I'm really excited for the project, and hopefully once it's live, I'll share with folks so that when they do take their pipe pilgrimage, they can also stop by the Eudora Welty House. And,
if you're into, you know, literature or southern literature, southern Gothic, Eudora Welty is a name you may want to know.
Yeah. So, well, and on top of that too, man, we had some amazing voice talent. We had the original or the curator. Who revitalized the garden and brought it back to its original state. And so she was there to share her thoughts. And then also Eudora Welty's, I want to say niece, was there to read some of the passages of her work. And we recorded it in very different fashions. And, you know, these are, upper middle-aged southern ladies and with very
excellent voices.
The accents, man. very
they don't make them like that anymore, man.
No, and I got to tell you, there is something very cathartic. And I mean, no disrespect to our upper middle-aged female southern listeners, but there is something very
which
cathartic.
We have many of.
Of course we do. There's something very cathartic of me being able to tell them what to do.
Yeah, exactly. That's funny.
Because down here in the South, that's not how it normally works.
Yeah, no, you've been spending your whole life, you know, having people that sound like they're out of Gone with the Wind tell you, like, where to sit and how to dress. And no, you sit there today because this is my show.
Right, exactly. And so that was kind of a cathartic experience.
That's great. Well, man, that's good. That's good. That's exciting. I look forward to listening to all that.
Yeah.
So,
awesome. It was a lot of fun. But the big benefit is that we were able to come in, and this is great. Not only is this episode, I hate to spoil this, because I always love to keep to maintain the illusion of everything. To be fair, more often than not, not only are episodes very fresh, they're typically like hours before they go out because we're so behind on recording.
I know.
but so for the next couple of weeks, we are kind of banking some episodes and kind kind of recording with the energy of being in the same room. This worked out well because not only is that the case, but you, my friend,
are about to have a son.
You got a package on the way.
I do, man. And you know, my wife is very much with child, and it, you know, really any day our due date is later this month, but she is very, very pregnant.
So, yes.
And it is very obvious, and she is very ready to meet our little boy. So man, it's exciting. We're fired up, you know. Of course, we're not ready at all, and you know, everything's a total disaster. We have no idea what we're doing, and yeah, we've got another, you know, child, but that literally has prepared us for nothing. And so yeah, I mean, we're right where we should be, Bo. All right, just right where we should be.
It's gonna be fine. It's gonna be great.
It's gonna be great. Everything's great. I'm just crying inside.
No,
we really can't wait to meet our baby boy. And you know, we'll be due any day. Everyone's been healthy so far, and you know, we're very thankful about that. I've already gotten questions. You know, when we had our daughter, I picked out a pipe kind of in her honor.
That's right, yeah.
Right? I picked out a pipe in her honor to kind of smoke as, you know, when I would think about her, wanted to, you know, meditate on her, pray for her, you know, kind of have this pipe where, you know, when I smoked it, it would be very intentionally to put my mind and senses around, hey, you know, my daughter. And I have not done that yet for my son. And
oh,
I'm kind of wondering, you know, is it something now that since we're this close, I should just wait to meet him and, you know, and find like, oh, is this a Siriacopo kid, or is this a is this a La Natra kid? Is this a Peterson kid?
This is the man that wouldn't allow us to pair pipe tobacco with barbecue.
No, exactly. Exactly. So I want to pair my pipe with my
son.
Offspring.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I gotta find the right. I think I'm gonna wait.
What,
I think at this point,
what
I'm
pipe is
up.
Your child? What does your child say about what pipe you need to purchase? That's wow. That's a series I never even could have fathomed.
Yeah. Let's not subject our gracious listeners to that. But yeah, man, it's exciting though. We're fired up.
So. That's awesome, man. I'm excited. More coals in the world just makes the world a better place. So we're all excited to meet your son as well. And look forward to the coming days. As rough as they're going to be, you'll be in our thoughts and prayers for
Thank
sure.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, man, we've got a great show that we're going to be diving into today. Now, you know, this is interesting. So we have been doing this show for some time, as we have mentioned before.
7.5 years?
Oh, somewhere in there. It was back in 2013. That sounds
crazy.
About right.
Yeah.
And so over that time, you know, every single week, not always on time, lately, but every single week, we've been putting out content, putting out episodes, and it's always great talking with like non-pipe people and explaining to them just the success that Country Squire Radio is, because they can't believe we've been talking about pipes and pipe tobacco every single week for that many years.
For years, yeah.
And still have content.
Absolutely.
And mountains of content. Giant, small mountains of content that is still out there to be mined for sure. But on occasion, there are subjects that we have covered before, but it's been so far back in the past. And in some instances, in our first 100 episodes, which of course listeners who've been listening to some time know, we don't have publicly available, but if you become a patron of the show, one of the benefits is you get access to those terribly just rough first 100 episodes of the show.
They're rough hewn like a Glen pipe.
There you go. Wow. The Glen season of Country Squire Radio.
Which is a thing of beauty in its own right. And, you know. Yeah.
I mean, people have said that they enjoy it.
Charming.
Charming.
I re-listened to that Glen episode, and I kept realizing that I kept calling his pipes, or her pipe, charming.
Yeah.
That was my insert word for, I don't know how to describe something without using more, you know, gracious language, and so we're just going to go with that.
Yeah. Interesting is typically my go-to, but I like charming.
Such is the first 100 episodes of Country Squire Radio.
Yes. So if you are interested in getting those first 100 episodes, head over to patreon.com/countrysquireradio. You can support the show and get access there. But there are topics that are kind of in that 100 episodes that are worth going back and revisiting.
Yeah.
Some of which we've chosen to before because they're relevant. I know Separating the Stigma was kind of a big episode.
Yeah.
That we revisited in the last few years here. And this is actually a topic that was brought back up by a listener. And this was from KJVXHN, which I'm assuming means King James Version Ten Hoen, meaning that this person...
You pulled that out of...
No!
Somewhere.
This is somebody who lives in the Hoenn region of the Pokemon universe.
Oh, great. That reads the King James Bible.
Well, 10 times. They've read it 10 times. And so that is my assumption here. But regardless, they did write in and requested that we revisit the topic of Morda.
Yeah.
Of course, listeners, you know, we always try to be mindful of the fact that, you know, people are constantly finding this new show that are especially like new pipe smokers.
Sure.
And, you know, you ask somebody who comes into the shop or who's going to be kind of a newer pipe smoker, they're familiar with briar pipes. Even if they don't necessarily know like that it's briar, they have kind of an image of what a pipe is.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's typically a briar pipe, even if they don't know it. They're like, oh, it's the wood one, you know, the brown kind of orangish wood one. But at the same time, they also might think of a Meerschaum pipe as well, with kind of the
corn cob
as well. Mm-hmm. But Morda is not necessarily a style, or rather a material that the average pipe or the average new pipe smoker is going to be familiar with. And yet it is such a beautiful material that has so many great benefits and is honestly some of my favorite pipes have been Morda pipes. So I'm really, really excited to revisit this topic with
you. I think it'll be fun. Yeah. You know, Morda, it's not necessarily what you think of when you come to pipe smoking for the first time. It's a dark, you know, material. It's weird looking. It's sinister. It's got, you know, these lines that are, you know, kind of, particularly if it's sandblasted, it's just got this strange work to it that, you know, doesn't necessarily evoke like a C.S. Lewis or Harry Truman style pipe. You know, it's just different. Yeah. So it's something to explore. A lot of premium pipes, you know, are made of this stuff. And frankly, because of how hard it is to work, even the crummy ones are expensive. So
out of curiosity, is Morda, and I mean, I know we're about to talk about why that's the case.
Yeah,
but,
sure.
But is Morda, would you say that's the most expensive material to make a pipe out of?
Unless you made a platinum pipe. No.
Well, functionally speaking.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know about the most expensive. That might be a different way to characterize it. But I will say, I mean, probably the most expensive pipes that are out there are made of briar. We should research
right,
this.
Right.
But there is not a inexpensive Morda pipe.
There you go.
If that makes sense.
Yeah,
so you have cheap briar pipes, you have expensive briar pipes, but there is not an inexpensive Morda pipe. The material, as we'll learn, is just so hard to mine. It's just a very difficult material. It's kind of, when you think about like what it goes through to harvest Morda, it's kind of nuts that we even try. Like, why? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, why would we? I mean, yeah, they make a beautiful pipe, but like, really?
But what else?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, hopefully we use it for something else, right? Like, you know, to, I don't know, feed, you know, starving baby seals or something. There's got to be some reason
please,
to mine Morda.
All right. Hang on. PSA. Do not feed your Morda pipe to a starving baby seal. That will not help the situation unless you're trying to kill the seal.
Yeah. If you have a starving baby seal in your life, please call another organization that is, you know, able to take care of them.
But Country Swire Radio said.
Right. they loved eating on them pie. So anyway, yeah, Morda, you know, diving into the, you know, the material itself, it's a semi-petrified bog oak. And, you know, we've talked about this before. So if you're a longtime Country Squire Radio listener and haven't even listened to our previous Morda episode, you've probably heard us mention some of these things before. But semi-petrified bog oak, you know, the most famous examples of this are going to be found in Eastern Europe or occasionally Central Europe or France. But you know, those really exquisite, outstanding pieces that you see are going to come from places like the Ukraine, the Balkans, you know, Croatia, some of these places. And it's just an interesting material. Peat bogs in the East, they, you know, you've got a muddy, acidic, boggy environment. You know, imagine just almost a swamp-like environment. Kind of a lot of standing water, a lot of you know, things that are in decay, and so yeah, just
so Louisiana,
like Louisiana, yeah, love Louisiana.
We love Louisiana,
yeah.
Of course we do.
You know, there's this kind of sense in which a lot of, you know, material in that area is just going to be very ancient, rough, devoid of a lot of nutrients and things of that nature. So you've got these peat bogs, and they, over thousands of years, you know, you might have a tree or something that has felled I mean, literally, let's say, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 years ago, it submerges within the kind of muck and, you know, suction of the clay that's in this environment. And then, you know, it becomes devoid of oxygen and surrounded by water and is just in this very acidic environment being, you know, encapsulized for centuries, literally centuries. And so what happens during this time is this wood, this piece of wood that falls into the, you know, into this environment, it is, you know, becoming basically a stone. It's being semi-petrified through this process where nutrients are being removed as the water comes in and out. It's replacing the, you know, chemical makeup of the actual wood itself. And so it's turning into a different material than it started out as. It's really interesting, you know, if you study even the nature of fossils and things like that. So it's just, it's bizarre. And, you know, the first examples of this are things that people just stumbled upon really on accident. And then it's like some artisans decide, well, you know, we're going to make some other stuff out of this too. And, right, it's just crazy, you know, the difference in, you know, briar and harvesting morta could not be more stark.
Right.
It could not be more stark. You've got, even in the procurement process of it, it's incredibly complicated and labor intensive and, you know, expensive compared to harvesting briar. You go to Europe and there's briar, you know, harvesters where you order briar and they, you know, they have a really kind of refined process where they go through, you know, identifying the heath trees and selecting the burls and sawing them and warehousing them and all this other stuff. And you can order them. And, you know, the more, you know, seasoned pipe carvers that are maybe better connected can go select their own briars and all this kind of stuff. But with morta, you're talking about something that has to be extracted from, you know, a clay that exhibits a suction process deep inside the ground, you know, that involves backhoes and cranes and, you know, tying chains to these ancient pieces of wood and, you know, having to saw them up just to be able to, you know, pull them out of a jealous ground, you know. It's just crazy.
Right.
I mean, so, you know, it's just very difficult in order to do that. The logs, as you're going through this boggy area, they actually, you know, so how do you identify these, right? Where you don't just walk through the bog and there's like, oh, well, there's a log. Let's take that and make a pipe out of it. They actually have to excavate. They search for these specimens by a process called poling. They take a metal stake and actually jab it into the ground. It's like their acupuncture of the bog, you know. And and when they hit a hard point, that's when they know there's a piece of oak that's likely there, or you know, something that they need to at least explore and look into. They'll pull these areas with these metal stakes, and when they find a specific point that has promise for having a piece of morta, they'll flag it with something, you know, saying, hey, we need to come back and excavate this particular area. You know, after they've done that a while, then bring in the cranes and the heavy equipment, and let's you know, get after digging this stuff up. Literally has to do with, you know, hey, let's tie, you know, metal chains around these pieces and use giant hydraulic lifts to pull them out of these bog environments. So really amazing. You know, the clay makes it very difficult to get this stuff out. And it also, you know, is very much a part of the material itself. You know, the clay, the water, it's contributing to this environment that makes the morta basically a fossil to some degree. So morta, because it comes out of the ground so wet, it has to be dried very carefully before it's worked into a pipe. It dries very fast, much faster than briar. You can think of briar being a material where, you know, it's a piece of wood, it's got its own natural moisture, and so that makes sense. But this is something that was, you know, surrounded by murky clay for, you know, in some cases millennia. And so, you know, it's going to dry faster because of how moisture wicks away from objects like that. And so, you know, anytime you have a material that's going to dry that quickly, you have to be careful because it's going to create the opportunity for instability in the material. So, you know, so you've got something, I mean, think of anything that, you know, dries fast from a very wet environment. It becomes brittle, it becomes fractured, it can break and split real easy and splinter off. And so because Morta dries so fast and is so fragile and ancient, it has to be dried intentionally, very slowly. They put it in these dark barns and environments in order for it to dry out very, very slowly. They even check the moisture over a period of years and sometimes reintroduce moisture to it if they think it's drying out too fast. And it's just very important in order to protect the very precious piece of wood that they've spent all this money extracting from the earth. So the material's tucked away in these dark barns and, you know, again, frequently re-moisturized in order to control that drying rate. And it, you know, if it's dried too fast, it'll just simply split and crack. You know, it's like a piece of firewood that, you know, just gets a little too dry. It's easy to crack open, you know, and splinters very, very quickly. You know, crafting the Morta pipe, very difficult because we've got a very peculiar piece of media here. So, you know, the block is difficult to work because the you know, it's so hard to get. The nutrients there create almost a stone-like material. Special equipment is needed to work these blocks because, you know, it has different properties from briar. It's just not as malleable and forgiving. The blocks are awkwardly shaped, and so the designs that you have for a Morta pipe are very limited. You know, you can't just go make any shape out of, oh, I think I'll make a cavalier right. out of a Morta pipe, yeah. or oh, this one will be a, you know, an oompaw or whatever. You're very limited on what you can do. There are examples of those in Morta pipes, but it's something that is more rare because you're just limited, you know, based on the size of the block. And so, therefore, the size of the pipe and the shape of the pipes tend to be a little more clunky, a little less refined. You know, refined is kind of a hard word, but maybe not accurate. It's almost,
I know what you're saying. There are exceptions to that.
Yeah. Yeah,
but,
there
but
are.
But I know exactly what
yeah,
you're saying.
Yeah, there are. I mean, you're not going to carve a very detailed, you know, face or
right.
something out of
right.
a Morta block. It's just not, it can't sustain that type of workability. You know, it really just can't. So it's a material that is limiting. So we talk about why all these crazy things that we have to go through to get Morta. You know, you extract it from the ground, you spend, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars getting this material, and, you know, it's really difficult to even find the stuff, and then once you do, you gotta pull it out. It's sitting in a barn for a couple of years, and you're paying rent on the barn, and, you know, and you gotta pay the guy to go in to re-moisturize it. It's just on and on
and then
and
after
on.
That,
it's
the like, demand is just through the roof.
Oh, it's through the roof
totally
because there's
it.
So many Morta pipe makers out there, and then you're like, well, I don't want to spend $400 on a pipe. And
right.
you're like, well, why do you think it costs $400? And so we had to, you know, it took the entire economy of, you know, Bulgaria to pull this thing out of the ground. And we apologize to our Bulgarian listeners. And,
yeah, we have no idea.
Yeah, we have no idea. But, you know, and then while you're working the pipe, because this material is so different, it's very easy to fracture and crack. And so you've done all the work, you've put all this effort into it, and now, you know, you're turning the Morta on a lathe, you're sawing it, and you're like, oh man, it's split, or oh, there's an imperfection, or there's a
yeah.
some kind of inclusion that you know, makes it less you know, attractive to the buyer. And so it's just very, very strange. So why do we go through all this trouble to make a Morta pipe, right?
Because we're pipe smokers and we don't do anything practically, or because it makes sense.
No, that's true. And really the answer is yes.
Right.
You know, yeah. I mean, I think everything you just described, it's like, well, we are pipe smokers. And so, we have to do things that are, statement making
mm-hmm.
and different and quirky, and you know, and so at some point Morta, you know, pipes just make sense. There's other you know, art, you know, crafts that, you know, folks use to make Morta. There's, you know, different kind of you know, artisanal things that are made from Morta, but pipes are just one more thing. The reason why we use Morta to make pipes is because it produces a very high quality smoking pipe. It's interesting. The aesthetic, obviously, we talked about before, it has a sinister look to it. It has a kind of, it can be a polished look, but an elegant look perhaps, almost like a dress pipe. You think of those highly lacquered Dunhill black pipes that you pull out with a tuxedo or something, and mortar pipes can have a similar feel to them. But you know, they smoke differently. These are pipes that, because they're reminiscent of a stone, they just have a different smoking characteristic mm-hmm. than briar. So briar, of course, we think of a wood that's very strong, but it also is a wood, and so it has to be babied a little bit. It has to be seasoned properly. It has to be maintained a different way. We spend a lot of time on things like building cake, putting only certain types of tobacco into a briar pipe in order to protect the flavor profile of that specific pipe and all that kind of stuff. And with Morta, a lot of that's thrown out the window. You know, it's right. much more like a meerschaum pipe, where, you know, the goal is, because of the strength of the material once it's carved, and also the properties where it's not really as absorbent, you know, as a piece of briar, you're not really dedicating a pipe like this to certain types of flavors. You're not really trying to build cake inside of a mortar pipe. You're wanting to right. swab the interior out after every single smoke in order to preserve that real clean mortar finish. And so, and what that does is it allows the pipe smoker to get the flavor of the tobacco each and every time as they're smoking. So the goal here is not to build that protective cake, but to let that chamber be as pure as possible, just so, you know, with every single smoke, you'll have the flavor of the tobacco itself. With a briar pipe, you're building cake, and so with each bowl, you do get the, you know, residual from the last tobacco you had in there. But briar, a lot of people forget, briar also imparts its own flavor into the experience.
Right. You mentioned before, it's like a cast iron skillet to
yeah.
some extent.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you've got the seasoning, but you've also got you have the seasoning there, but you also have the flavor of the briar itself, you know, and so that is part of the experience. And so with Morta, much more akin to clay or meerschaum, you're just, kind of changing the equation there a little bit, changing the makeup of the whole flavor profile. So
you get to the very essence of what the tobacconist was doing with the flavor. Yes.
And our apologies to our friends. Or Italian? I don't know. Our European
yeah,
listeners?
Yeah, all of them. Apologies to every listener at all times.
At all times.
So that's kind of it. You know, it's interesting. Morta, because of, all the things we describe, it is an expensive material to work with. It's an unforgiving material, you know, and the shapes that you'll find out of this are limited, but the smoking characteristics of it are highly prized. And, it winds up being something that is a showpiece. Most people are not going to have a pipe collection that is centered on Morta. You're going to have these kind of peppered into your collection, like an olive wood pipe or something made out of cherry or, obviously meerschaum, corn cob, others, so this is probably not going to be your daily smoker. A lot of times, too, these pipes are, if they're large, they are going to be really heavy. You can find smaller mortar pipes. There are actually quite a few smaller mortar pipes, and they can be lighter, but, you know, it's just an awkward material, and so this probably is not going to be your daily smoke.
No, I mean, it's to make a statement, and it's definitely kind of, if you see somebody at the pipe shop or just out, you don't typically see somebody out and about with a mortar pipe. If you see them with a yeah. mortar pipe, it's at, like, a show, it's at, you know, it is at the pipe shop, it is right. at an event or something of that
They're not
nature.
Walking down the street.
They're not walking down the street.
Nobody's the dog with their tweed jacket and their mortar pipe.
That's right. Yeah, nobody's lunting with a mortar pipe. And if you are, correct us. We've been wrong before.
No, we want to hear about it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I've got two mortar pipes in particular yeah. in my collection that are very dear to me. And one of them was carved by listener Steven up in Michigan.
Yeah.
And he gifted it to me. It's a smaller
about
one.
That pipe.
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful. And it's one of my favorites. It's got a kind of a bamboo stem on it. And admittedly, it's not one that I smoke as often because I'm always nervous about a bamboo stem, to uh-huh. be honest with you. But uh-huh. I think it's one of the most beautiful pipes in my collection.
Yeah.
And then the other one is was also a gift from a collaboration of folks. Remember when my car got towed in New Orleans?
Yep.
Yep.
Never forget it.
Yeah.
New Orleans Pipe Show circa, what was that, 2014, 2015?
I don't know, pre-COVID
whatever it
sometime.
Was. Yep.
Yeah. But folks at the show a part or teamed up with Rock's Pipes, and they chipped in and gave me a mortar pipe.
Yeah,
I call it the Rhino. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah,
and it smokes great, and that one is more of like a tube. And it's a poker.
It's got a poker. The stainless steel shank and all
yes.
that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a cool style. Mm-hmm. And I think it's got a very unique look to it. But both of those are actually lighter mortars. I've seen some of those like billy clubs, and I can't deal with those, man. That doesn't work.
Yeah,
for me.
They're not particularly good for clinching. That's for sure. The one, I have two mortar pipes, actually. One I smoke semi-regularly, and it's a Davern pipe. If you've long-time listener of the show, may have heard us mention that name before. But Davern Dinovic out of Croatia makes these beautiful pipes. They're very very elegant, lots of neat accent material, stem colors, all this kind of stuff. But almost universally, they're as big as golf clubs.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, these are just big pipes.
Huge.
They're just big pipes.
Cool
and
looking.
Beautiful. And my favorite mortar pipe is a one of these Davern special edition clubs. And it's awesome, man. The bowl is all of an inch wide and very deep. I can get, you know, I've smoked that pipe literally for 2.5 hours before, and it still had tobacco left in the bottom of it when I was finally like, I got to go inside. You know, just very impressive pieces, you know, and you know, there again, that piece, I think, was retailed for, you know, somewhere around $450. And, you know, that's the nice thing about being in the trade. Sometimes you get it for a little cheaper price. But, they're just, you know, once you realize what goes into extracting and producing this material, and how few come out on the other side, you know, smoke worthy, look worthy, all these things, without blemish, it's, you know, it's, then you understand why, you know, why it would cost so much.
Yeah,
so,
man.
Yeah.
You know, I remember the first time I saw petrified wood was at it was at the Natural Science Museum here in Jackson. I didn't live in Jackson at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Lived in Meridian, Mississippi, about 45 minutes outside of town. And we took a day trip, like an elementary school day trip up to Jackson. And we walked through the Natural Science Museum. And I'll never forget seeing this, like, you know, I mean, like, you know, big thing that looked like a log.
Right.
And they told us that it was a rock.
Right.
You know, like basically a rock. And I was like, what? And so, like, I remember touching it and I was mesmerized. The class continued going on and I just kept there staring at that thing because it broke my brain.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. It is, you know, it blows up the categories. You know, it's something that doesn't really, you know, make a lot of sense, but it is. It's much more akin to a stone than it would be a piece of wood.
Well, you know, that's the beautiful thing about nature. There's things that you think of that, like, have a certain purpose or could only be one thing, and then all of a sudden, boom, you're hit with, like, wait, this is used for that? And right. It's amazing?
Right.
Kind of, you know, kind of like, let's say, I don't know, corn cobs.
Like a corn cob.
You're sitting there, you're eating your corn, you're tossing your corn cob out, you may look at it briefly, but then one day you learn, like, wait a minute, you can make a pipe out of this, and that's not a joke? No,
man.
Sir.
And someone's done it, and they've done it to perfection.
To perfection. Of course, we're talking about our friends at Missouri Meerschaum.
That is right, man. That is right. Of course, beautiful corn cob pipes that are made right here in the USA. We're talking today about the Little Devil Cutty corn cob pipe. You know, when we think about the...
Talk about... I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
This episode is about some of the largest pipes out there, and we're talking about the Little Devil.
Little Devil.
All right,
that's
let's go for it. All the way.
What makes sense about this this segue here... You know, most mortar, they have either this dark golden color or, but most have a very dark black color from, you know, the kind of semi nutrient void, petrified state of this wood.
Yeah.
And so, one thing that Missouri Meerschaum does on so many of their pipes that make them so sharp looking and so good looking, and it's like, man, can a corn cob look that good? They have this proprietary blend that they, not blend, but finish that they put on the outside of their pipe that makes it kind of have this kind of black, rustic, dressed look to it. You know what I mean? Just really, really, really attractive. And so that finish is featured on the Little Devil Cutty corn cob pipe. And it's just a really attractive, look. It's a pocket pipe, something that's got a medium sized bowl, you know, good for, you know, a 45 minute smoke if you pack it right, and fits nicely in your pocket. Filterless stem with a hardwood insert in the bottom of the bowl. It also comes in a acorn shape, which is very attractive. And so just a great great piece from Missouri Meerschaum. You can get it from the source at corncobpipe.com. Retails for only $13.29. And man, get on there, grab one for yourself, grab one for your friends. As we always say, keep several around the house for that time you get some interested wannabe pipe smokers to come over and man, check it out. We know you'll love it.
That's great. And if you've got Little Devil, be sure to smoke it this week. Take a picture of yourself doing so. It's a great way to let the good folks at Missouri Meerschaum know you appreciate them for sponsoring the show. One last thing I got to get in before we transition.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about the like just what Morta is, right? Like this petrified bogwood, this kind
yeah.
of, you know, this historic thing trapped in the earth that has this, you know, deep history there. And then, you know, very recently we did an episode on amber stems.
Yeah, that wasn't too long ago.
Has there ever been a Morta pipe that has an amber stem? Like, you know, I'm thinking about, I think I could be wrong, but I believe
there probably is.
I think we called that episode Jurassic Pipes. And so I'm thinking about John Hammond, right? And that staff he had with the amber, you know, the mosquito and,
and
the thing and everything.
Yeah.
So now what I want is I want an amber, like tube, like a crystal, whatever,
right.
orb, whatever that thing was, right?
Okay.
I want that, but I want the staff to be made of Morta,
wow.
right? Carved Morta. And that's what, that, if I ever get crazy, stupid, spending money on dumb things, Rich, that's what I want.
Hot air balloon, rich people stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
No, that's good. That makes sense. Those two things are so old, so ancient, and so hard to, hard to work that, it probably create a tear in the space-time continuum or something if you try to pair those two things together. I don't know, but that's that'd be impressive and very expensive.
Yeah, I just that's what I want. I want to be super old, like, you know, wearing around my white suit and be like, welcome to Jurassic Pipes.
Pipe question of the week.
All right, man, pipe question of the week coming in this week from Jeremy. Here is what Jeremy had to say. Hey, guys, I'm a big fan of the show and have been listening for years. I so enjoy and appreciate what you two do from tuning in every week. Thank you for being there and serving the community. Ewoks forever. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you. I appreciate that, brother. So the question, if you had $100 to spend on a pipe, would you buy new or an estate? Most of my collection consists of estate pipes, including some from Sheraton and GBD, and I wouldn't have been able to afford new, those that I wouldn't have been able to afford new. It seems to me like a much better value to buy an estate, doesn't it? Your thoughts? Thanks again. And that comes from Jeremy.
Yeah, great question. I'm going to give an answer that probably is different from what it would have been 2 or 3 years ago.
Okay.
But I would have to go with an estate pipe as long as it was in really good shape. You mentioned it, Jeremy. I mean, it's something you can get a very heavy value on. I mean, some of these pipes are just exquisite. They're from brands that haven't been made in decades, and you know the briar is, you know, in some cases older than your grandmother. And I mean, you know, it's just it's they all have a story. They're, you know, fun and beautiful. They make, you know, pipe shapes and designs that were popular in the 40s aren't necessarily popular or available now. And so, you know, I love older pipes like that. And and of course, you know, you're getting a pipe that you know, maybe brand new on the market, you know, would have been several hundred dollars. That's under $100 or thereabouts. And so one of my favorite small pipes is a tiny Dunhill from the 50s that I was I bought off a customer of mine. Actually, he had it cleaned up, and he was like, you know, I don't really smoke this pipe, but you know, do you know someone that would be interested in it? And I was like, well, I would be interested.
I'm someone,
and it's one of my favorite smokers. A great little pipe, and so, you know, picked it up for $100 off this guy, and probably would have retailed obviously brand new for much more than that. So, a great question. I would probably tend towards that. There is something to be said about breaking in your own pipe. You know, you can clean an estate pipe. You can get it, spick and span, and you know, reset as possible. You know, using a salt and alcohol treatment or something of that nature. But there is something to be said about, you know, breaking in your own pipe you know, for the first time, right? And so, you know, there's a place for that. And if you are starting your pipe smoking journey, I'd probably start there just to, you know, with newer pipes, just to, you know, make sure you're getting something, you know, clean, unadulterated, all this kind of stuff. With estate pipes, sometimes there's guesswork. You know, if it tastes weird, you're like, well, is that the tobacco? Did someone smoke right. something strange in this? Like, you know, why I'm smoking this pipe, but now I'm seeing like purple elephants. What's that about? And, you know, so it's just, you just don't know the history of it. It's kind of more of a guessing game. But anyway, so newer pipe smokers, I would probably, you know, advise you to get a new pipe. But, you know, if you're building your collection or looking for your next piece, you know, I think the estate pipe is the way to go.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, Jeremy even mentions that, you know, the bulk of his collection is really consisting of estate pipes. I'm sure, Jeremy, you are not alone there. I think that's probably true for a lot of pipe smokers who have a soiree, as I like to say, of pipes.
Yeah.
Which is not the appropriate use of that word.
It's not.
But that's how I always use it. So that's that's how I do it. But anyway, the point is that if you've got a bunch of pipes in your collection, chances are percentage of that actually comes from estate pipes. You know, it's interesting. I think the thing for me that makes me say estate pipes has more to do with, he said, like, if you get $100. Because $100 to play with in terms of, like, pipes.
Yeah.
Like, that... I mean, that's not no money. You know what I mean? But like, if you're going to apply $100 and get a better quality pipe for $100, then you're probably going to do an estate pipe. Now, if you're talking about like $500, then I'm going to go for like some like new pipe that I would not normally get. You know, I'd treat myself.
I think that's a good point, actually, because, you know, at that point, an estate pipe that's still worth $500. I mean, let's talk about, you know, we've got a 35, 40, 50 year old pipe that's been used, smoked, and it's still worth $500. I don't know if I could do that and then still smoke it. Like, that's almost like a, that almost
that's
sounds
glass
to me,
case.
Like something that belongs in the Smithsonian or something like it. You know, at that point I might,
it's a Fabergé egg.
If a Fabergé egg, you know, made of Morta and amber stemmed. Right. Yeah. I don't know.
Yes.
I probably at that point would maybe thinking about getting a higher end pipe.
Yeah.
That's new. So yeah, good point.
So that was one thing I wanted to point out about the question. Cause I do think, you know, price point wise, I think, I'd go estate pipes as well. But if we were talking about like somebody dropped, you know, a higher, you know, just, hey, here's $500, go buy yourself a pipe. I'm going new. I'm going to treat myself to a pipe I would not normally buy. You know what I mean? From that standpoint.
Sure. That's fair. Yep.
All right. Well, great question, Jeremy. And hey, if you've got a pipe question for us, you can send it in the show. That is show@countrysquireradio.com.
Quick fire
with the Squire. Quick fire questions. Ow! All right, man. This is the playing with the kids edition. Because you got a kid on the way.
I do, man.
And I think it's good to remember, because you're about to head back into diaper territory. You're basically still kind of in the diaper.
We're swimming in it.
Yeah. So, you know, but the thing is, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, because the kids, you know, they can talk, they can play, you can do all kinds of fun stuff and everything else. You know, don't get me wrong. The light's further down in the tunnel.
I was about to say, the light seems so far away.
But it's there. This is the playing with kids edition. All right, this is what you're, you know, how you're playing with kids.
Okay.
Video games or board games?
Board games. Yeah, no, go ahead and say video games.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, it's board games are great, but I'm telling you, once the kids can play video games, it's so much fun. Because the other thing, too, is, like, some of the board games you really enjoy playing, like, especially as, like, an adult, your kids, like, they got to be teenagers to really, like, be competitors in the space.
That's true. And when you vanquish them, it's, you know, difficult for their little psyches and all that kind of stuff.
Right. My oldest is getting better at chess, but like, you know, I want to play Risk and that sort of thing. But like in the video games, early on, they can hold their own. You know what I mean? Like they're pretty good, pretty quick. So I'm going video games. Blocks or stuffed animals? This is with the younger.
Man, blocks. Yeah, I still love blocks. It's one of those things where, you know, my daughter is learning how to, her motor skills are getting better and she's, you know, building little creations and stuff. And, and you know, the only problem is anytime I build something, her favorite, you know, best joy on this earth is to tear it down, to destroy it.
Yes. So. Yes.
Yeah, I'll build this like really creative tower or something, or, you know, maybe try to, you know, just some structure. And she's like, well, that would look better deconstructed.
Yeah. But what if the floor? Yeah.
But what if the floor? And of course, you know, we let her do that every time. But I'm going to go with blocks.
That's good. Yeah, I love blocks as well, man. I used to, my same deal. I used to have this game where I would make as many block towers as possible, and then she would come in as a force of nature and destroy them. And so I had in my head, there was like this ancient civilization that is constantly trying to rebuild itself up, but then she comes in and destroys it every couple of millennia or something like that. You gotta do that. You gotta do that for a while. Dolls or action figures?
Action figures. And I don't think that's just because I'm a boy. I think, you know, male, well, never
dude.
Mind. Yeah. I don't know. Dolls are creepy, and, you know, action figures are, you know, there's something about, you know, oh, you've got your, you know, army man or your little princess, and it's, you know, you're playing with a, you know, plastic dinosaur, and I don't know. That's just more fun to me.
Yeah. I mean, they really, so I'm trying to think, for my girls, there's one or two things they've got that I would like consider a dolls, but even like the, what would have been called like a doll a couple of years ago, I still kind of consider more of an action figure. Cause it's like Moana and Elsa and like all these, like, you know, the Disney princesses are all superheroes these days.
Oh, okay. you know what I mean? Said like, those names, and I was who on earth are you talking about?
I'll just give it a couple of years. And then, like, you know, they got a Captain Marvel and a Rey, and, you know, so, I mean, this is pretty cool. You have no idea who I'm talking about.
No clue.
All right, fair enough. So, yeah, action figures. And then finally, tag or hide-and-go-seek?
Hide-and-go-seek. There's more opportunity to be creative when you play hide-and-go-seek. Tag is just, you know, who can run the fastest and, you know, climb up the stairs and shut the door quicker and all that kind of stuff.
Tag is great for like wearing the kids out before bed or something like that.
Yeah.
Hide and go seek is great because if you're good at it, then you just bring your phone with you. You hide.
Oh, yeah.
They think you're playing with them, but you can actually just, like, you know, surf the internet
just or hanging out.
Send some emails and, like, you know, like the stuff you were doing before they asked, like, Dad, come play. Like, all right, let's play hide and go seek.
Yeah, we're going to play hide and go seek. You're up in the attic, like they can't even like reach the trap door to get up there, and you're like, you know, going through old episodes of Country Squire Radio.
There you go. Wouldn't be the first time. There you go. All right, so there it is. Quick fire questions. Hey, if you got some quick fire questions for us, send them into the show. That is show@countrysquireradio.com.
Your thoughts, your comments, listener feedback.
Listener feedback.
Mm-hmm.
All right, man. We've got quite the listener feedback here from Jack in Santa Fe. Oh, Santa Fe. Wait. Yeah. No, Santa Fe. Santa Fe, Texas. I always think of... Jack in Santa Fe? Hang on.
You were processing out loud, like, verbal diarrhea. What is happening?
No, Newsies. In Newsies, there's the character... I think his name is Jack. I need to go back and rewatch that. But like the main character that's played by a young Christian Bale, he's obsessed because he lives in like, you know, old school New York, but he wants to live out like where the cowboys are in Santa Fe. He's got this whole song called Santa Fe, are you there? And you swear you won't forget me. If I found you, would you let me come and stay?
I'll take your word for it.
All right.
I love how we process this stuff like in real time and then people... You know, before you know it, like, you know, what do you mean that, you know, Bob Dylan didn't write this song, right. And then they're raking you over the coals, and before you know it, people burned your house down. It's crazy.
It's whether or not the character's name is Jack. They called him Cowboy, but I can't quite remember. All right, here we go. Hello, Bo and John David. Bo recently said he was looking for fishing recommendations along the Texas Gulf Coast near Houston. I wanted to recommend the Texas City Dike to him. The dike does not offer the wide beaches or crashing waves of the seashore, but it does provide some pretty diverse fishing opportunities. It's 5 miles long, stretches out into the Galveston Bay towards the Ship Channel, leading from the Gulf of Mexico to the Port of Houston. Oh, sweet. The north side is mostly sandy, sand bottomed, and tends to be shallow going very far out. It makes for good wide fishing for flounder. What? You can fish for flounder in Texas? I didn't know that. And trout. There are also a number of sandy locations on the shore, so kids can still get that beach experience. I would be careful with the young children playing too far out into the water, though. The large shipping traffic nearby creates some occasional bit significant waves due to their displacement, and some of the children have actually drowned in the current. Goodness.
Oh, man.
Yeah, you got to be careful. The south side of the dike is a shipping channel that offers excellent deep water fishing and produces a wide variety of fish, including bull reds and large drum. Now, those I like. I know Bo is off social media for a while, but there is a very active Facebook group called the Texas City Dike Fishing. It can give you a feel for the experience of fishing what and the fish waiting to be caught. If you're looking for new places to try, I would recommend giving it a shot. I hope this is helpful. On a personal note, I only recently discovered your podcast and have become a subscribing member. I so enjoy your content, but particularly your camaraderie and unashamed expression of your faith. Your ability to combine your faith and business with all the rich history of both is unusual and refreshing. It's good stuff, and I hope you'll produce the show for many years to come. I plan to visit the store on a pilgrimage. I have a dear friend who lives in Jackson, Tennessee. And I hope to convince him to meet at your shop so we both can take in the full experience. Thanks so much for all that you do. Look forward to someday meeting you in person. Your brother in Christ, Jack Rohde. All right, Jack, buddy. All right, we need to let you know. It's a common misconception. It's Jackson, Mississippi.
Yeah.
That we're based out of.
No, that's right.
Now, he might know that. And maybe it's
He might want his friend in Jackson, Tennessee to drive to Jackson, Mississippi, and they meet at our shop. That'd be great.
That would be great. And hopefully that's the case, because I'm a little worried that Jack's been sending his friend in Jackson, Tennessee, like, where's the country store? All over the place trying to find us.
But, poor guy. Yeah.
No, Jackson, Mississippi. But yeah, definitely, man. Make that pilgrimage for sure.
Man, Jack, thank you so much. And we're very grateful for the kind comments. And of course, Bo is now going to be tearing up that fishing hole.
Yeah, man. I didn't know you could catch like trout and flounder in Texas. Maybe I'm stupid for not knowing that, but I had no clue.
Yeah. Well, I don't fish.
You really don't, though. You really don't. All right. So I'm going to. Yes. All right. Jack Kelly is the character's name from Newsies.
Okay.
That is obsessed with Santa Fe. So in my mind, Jack Kelly became some sort of time traveler, came to the present, changed his last name to Rohde, lives in Santa Fe, and gets Jackson, Tennessee and Jackson, Mississippi occasionally
mixed up,
which just puts him in like the vast majority of Americans, to be honest.
Because why would they know?
Yeah. But anyway, there you go. Jack from Santa Fe. Awesome, man. Thanks so much for that feedback. And hey, if you'd like to send us your thoughts on the show or corrections or, you know, acceptances of our apologies. We apologize to so many different people this episode. That's always a good sign.
Yeah, I'm sure we left someone out.
Yeah, clearly. But you can, of course, contact us, show@countrysquireradio.com. You can also follow the show on Twitter @SquireRadio. You can follow John David @JohnDavidCole or the shop @_CountrySquire. But all that and more can be found at countrysquireradio.com.
Bam.
Yeah, man. Morta pipes.
Yeah, it's fun, man. It makes me want to go smoke my Morta. I actually haven't smoked it in quite a while. Particularly my favorite Davern that's just so large. It takes a certain point in time to be able to say, yeah, okay, I'm gonna commit to this. You know, it's like smoking a really big cigar or something. It's like, okay, this is gonna involve some time, but is very important. So you never know. Today might be the day.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe you could dedicate the Morta pipe to your son. And that way you can get away from the kids. Like, no, I need to contemplate on these kids with this giant Morta pipe that'll take me away.
It's like, why is your pipe the size of a trash can?
Hey, man. Let's go have a day.
See you, brother.